Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to another wonderful episode of Brainstorm Brewery.
Not a very special episode, because you always say it's very special.
Oh,
so now people are going to wonder why this one isn't very special.
It's not special.
Not at all. It's no longer special. The podcast has just become a chore. So it's wonderful, though. We enjoy it, every bit of it.
Can our guests be very special?
We don't have guests. Ray's not a guest. Ray's home.
Ray, are you very special? I think Jason may be trying to insult you.
Man, I thought I was very special. My mama told me I was very special.
Your mama told me the same
thing. Anyway, so yeah, we've got Ray Perez, Ray Future Pro, on the cast again. So welcome Ray. For everyone who doesn't know, he was a rookie on the Pro Tour at the last Pro Tour and, just crushed it and I think finished 11th, right?
Yep, 11th.
So yeah, very glad
to have. We should have done a little bit of like research. Hey, we got a guest. Let's not know what position he finished on this first Pro Tour.
Star City kept saying I was 9th. Like in all the coverage that they did on me, they're like, Ray got 9th. Ray got 9th. And I kept reading it like, no, I definitely got 11th. But so.
9th is worse, man. That would suck.
Well, 9th was Pat Chapin and, I would get 9th if I would have won my last round versus Drawing. So I was locked out.
Yeah. But you're ready for this Pro Tour, so you're going to be talking about your deck a little bit this time, right?
I will. Corbin is a fan of my deck.
So anybody that knows Corbin might have a guess of that. What possibly could Corbin like that Ray would be playing?
Slivers!
Similar.
But, you know, so we're going to talk about that, and also we're going to talk some Standard, because we got some juicy stuff coming out. They had the Super Series. We got the first SCG coming on. And there's some more Standard brewing going about. So we're going to talk some Standard going on. But before we do that, let's jump into these picks of the week.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
So I'll start it off this time.
Oh, hey, so we got some feedback that the pick of the week music is much louder than the rest of the cast. I think you should keep that up because I like the idea of someone in their car spilling coffee on themselves because we just blasted loud music at them.
That's how you get sued, Jason. Can't have people spilling coffee on themselves.
We can't be liable for that.
Yeah, it's not our fault that they have their music.
In fact.
You know, actually, I realized that 2 weeks ago and I didn't do it this last week. But you know what? We'll figure it out one day.
So anyway, thanks to our buddy Steve Wolf for the Pick of the Week music.
Yes, indeed. We love it. Love it indeed. Steve Wolf, check him out. Steve Wolf Studios. He did that, the bumper music. And if you like it, send him all the shout-outs. I don't know if we got him on Twitter somewhere. But we're going to talk about my Pick of the Week. We're going to talk about...
And I think the best part about the music is how he did several different songs for us, and they're all really good.
You know what else is the best part? When we tell Jason to shut the fuck up.
Aw.
That part.
Aw.
Jason is a little tipsy. Don't worry. He's not going to be a complete dick this time, contrary to popular belief. We're going to have – he's just mad because I actually picked this, and this was his pick of the week, but I got it first.
So I want to talk about my pick of the week, which is Eidolon, A Countless Battles. It's a really good card, I think. Okay, Marcel, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, and that's my pick of the week is Countless Eidolon, A Countless Battles. I was kind of poo-pooing the card when it came out, but you can get it now. It's on – it's what, $3, but you can find it on TCG Player for like $2.50 or $2.25, all the way down to $1.50. Well, you can find this card. You see a few decks with this, especially decks, you know, piloting Brimaz, or if you wanted to do Devotion because it does have two pips. I played this card on beta. The card was actually pretty sweet. The actual, bestow being 4 is very reasonable. The card gets pretty big with a bunch of creatures out there. You know, I just think there's a lot of potential with this card. So at $3, I, you know, trade for it, get it. I don't know about spending cash, but if you get it for cheaper than that, I think it's a good pickup to get at this time. Because you're going to see it in the scene as like a 4 of in most of the decks that I've seen. They're popping up. So this card's played heavily when it's going to be in the decks.
And I think casual players like it enough that if we're totally off base about this card, and you end up with a bunch of copies, like, I think you'll be able to get rid of them probably four at a time, because I think casual players like this kind of card. So, I mean, if you see stuff like Reckless One and, you know, Drove of Elves and crap like that, anything with Star-Star that, like, is scalable and, you know, vaguely tribal, I think this is the kind of thing that you're not going to end up sitting on if it doesn't pan out, unlike some of the stuff like Blood Hollows and some of that kind of stuff that doesn't really have that appeal. So you can hedge your bets a little bit and go in deeper on something like this.
What happened with Wayfaring Temple, that XX that we liked when Ravnica came out? We were pretty excited about it.
Really, Wayfaring Temple was replaced by Scion of the Vitugazi, but don't worry, nobody likes that card either except for me and Ryan Archer.
I like
that
card.
Card is garbage.
Shut your mouth, Ray, just because it's not a poke.
So who's next on this?
I will go, because I'm reversing myself, and people like when I do that. Okay, this isn't a full reversal. This is a card that I was sort of
It's a crappy-ass card. Why?
What? I'll pick a different card. The different card is Afara. So...
Yes, I agree.
Shut up, Ray! I'm talking. So this is a card that I was sort of like,
Did you pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, I'm almost positive. I see what you're doing to me, and I did it to you already, so it's less funny.
Oh, it's more funny.
More funny. This is what I do to people. This doesn't feel good at all. I've learned a lesson today.
I don't think you have.
I sure as shit haven't. Afara is a card I didn't really like before. I thought it needs a very specific deck, and that was like a blue-black aggro deck, so you're playing enough creatures to trigger it. I think Brimaz can kind of get you there, because Brimaz is a good way to make tokens on their turn for zero mana. Correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it the only way to make zero mana creatures on their turn in standard? I don't know. But Brimaz is already a good card, and Brimaz is already giving you two of the additional five devotion you need to turn Afara on, but really just playing creatures and making creature tokens to draw cards is going to be good. And my buddy Joey D, podcast listener, good buddy of mine, noticed that Saito's Card Shop was actually streaming their FNM, and somebody built the blue-white aggro deck that I hypothesized Afara would need to exist. So you're going like Soldier of the Pantheon into Precinct Captain, and you know, just playing some blue-white weenies, keeping your handful with Afara, turning Afara on, beating for six. I think it's good. I think you want to play Spear in that deck. Spear with Brimaz is probably fine. Maybe you can even play Marcel's pick, Eidolon of Countless Battles. I don't know, but Afara is a card I said I don't think it has a deck. I actually do think that it does have a deck, and I like these at about $8.
Hmm. Doesn't Aetherling pop off Afara every turn?
Sure does. That's not a zero mana way to do it, but it's a very good way to do it. And you know, that's if you're playing like a control deck with Aetherling, your detention spheres are actually a good way to get your devotion. So that's something to think about too. You could like play a couple Supreme Verdicts with Afara sitting out there. You flash out your Aetherling, flash it back in, and then your D-sphere turns it on. So that's a good way to do it also. So maybe that deck works as well.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a nice little, I question whether or not you need extra cards once you have Aetherling out, but.
Nope, because your Sphinx's Revelation colors at that point.
Yeah, kind of what I was thought. But in general, I like the idea. And like I mentioned before, Lyep Sky Knight, you know, the 3-1 Detain Flyer, like that's a pretty powerful card at 3 mana that's just never had a deck. But if people are starting to kind of go in this direction, I think that card gives that archetype a lot of power. Afara is a nice way to top out and keep the gas coming. I could see that.
Yeah, I've heard a few rumblings on Twitter about Afara and people warming up to the card and finding it better than they initially thought.
I don't think we ever thought it was bad. I think we thought it was conditional and needed a very specific deck, but I think people have shown that it's a little bit more flexible. I even saw it in this Bant deck that was running one of Afara and, you know, like four Cursor, Krufix, you know, four Brimaz. So, like, it can even be jammed in there just if all you ever want is an enchantment that draws you cards off your Brimaz triggers.
Corsair of Krufix had a pretty good weekend last weekend after we had Ruben on. Ruben talked up the card. It did pretty well last weekend.
Is that your pick?
That is not my pick because...
Well, why don't you save that for a different segment?
I'm just saying, you mentioned the card. Just saying, it seems like it's been pretty solid. So
Did pretty well too. There was, I think, three different decks in the top 32 that were playing it.
Red Green Monsters jammed a place out of Corsair Krufix, so it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
Now, Corsair Krufix is the real deal.
Domri and Chandra, like, that does seem disgusting.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so what's really cute, that Bant deck I mentioned was running Archangel of Thune, so you give Archangel of Thune fucking a landfall. It's amazing.
Alright, I derailed us. I'll get us back on. I got a pick of the week. It's a two-parter. Those two parts are both Planeswalker. Johnny Goldmane and Sorin, Lord of Innistrad. You know, we talked a lot about fairies may not be the best Bitter Blossom deck. Well, what is? Probably Black-White Token. Sorin is at a all-time low right now, obviously with the, you know, it's to be expected, had the dual type printing, and it's pretty much plateaued at $5 over the past 3 months.
Is it $5?
It is $5 TCG median, which means obviously you can get it for a little cheaper even. But the point is, all Planeswalkers have shown to go up over time. Like, this is a pretty low possibility of a reprint, considering it's already been reprinted. You know, like I said, it's a Planeswalkers, they're casual appeal. Planeswalkers that aren't really played at all are worth $10 now, just because they're older. And I mean, I see this following the same route. And then once you consider the fact that it could actually see play in that four drop spot in black white tokens, maybe, you know, this thing gets does well at the Pro Tour. Somebody's playing two Sorins to top out their black white tokens deck. Yeah, you know, it's going to see some movement. I don't know though. The question is it Johnny Goldmane, which has already shown a little upward movement in the past week at, you know, about $7, is that a better pickup than,
Is that how you make your point? You're like, this card's so good, I'm gonna slam my fucking spoon in my ice cream bowl. Boom! A Johnny Goldmane! Suck it!
It wasn't me, and I was trying to
Oh, I don't know which Jason's not to make fun of other people besides Corbin.
I don't know which one of you it was, but
it's a magic conspiracy.
I heard it. I tried to ignore it. I knew you were just trying to make fun of me. Anyways, a Johnny and Soren, pick them both up. I'm not eating my ice cream. I did that before the cast started, out of respect to our listeners. All right, who wants to go next?
Time for a shot. All right, let's go.
Oh, this is a shit show.
Ryan, what? Ray, no, it's Ray's turn.
Yes.
Ryan gets a pinch of it. He's our cleanup hitter.
I don't know if I have a pick of the week for value, but I know the card that's most impressed me from standard point was Kiora. That card was way better than I thought it was, and I got a chance to play with it for the first time today, and I don't know if it's going to go up at all, because I think $19 on TCG is about where it's at, and that's what I got him for. But I think that card will see a lot more play than I thought it would originally. Card is just sweet. Like, I've had a turn where I went land, which was a scry land, and then I negatived one to draw a card, played another scry land, and that was sweet. Or just making Krakens is a lot easier than I thought it would be.
So do you find that when you crack that first negative one, do people tend to attack it for that second time to get rid of the counters? Or do they avoid just the Planeswalker at all?
I think it's matchup dependent. Like, the matchup where I was usually taking advantage of the negative one right off the bat was against Final Black, where they have either a Mutavault in play or, like, the chance of a hero's downfall or some type of pressure on the board already, where I know that, like, a fog effect from the plus one won't really work. So, like, because Black is the only deck that I can see that can really pressure it out of nowhere because they have Hero's Downfall. The rest of the decks kind of have creatures. Not really too many decks play creatures with haste, so whatever's on the board, you can kind of mitigate that as you come to it. But in the control mirror, you have end up 10 Planeswalkers total, and or in the BBD deck, that is, and that is way better because you have so many targets for...
I'm sorry, Ray, but the what?
The BBD deck, it's a blue-white control, basically the Saito deck, but it takes away two Last Breath from the main deck because they played four, and the second Syncopate for three of Kiora, and then it changes the black dual lands, the temples and whatnot, for green dual lands, and that's basically what you run, and then you have Mistcutters in the sideboard over Doomblades. And that deck was really sweet, so
You have nothing else in green other than Kiora?
Correct, yep. Kiora is the only card, or main deck, that was green, and then you have Mistcutters in sideboard, but everything else.
Wait, you splash for double green in the sideboard?
Mistcutters one green X.
Oh, that's right. What am I thinking?
Yep. And it's a fireball, so I like that.
Yeah, it's true.
So with Kiora, do you like Sylvan Caryat with it? Or do you think that, do you want a wrath and that gets in the way awkward?
I feel like there is a version out there somewhere. Like, me personally, I'm not a deck builder, so that's my biggest disadvantage when I look at newer cards is like, okay, how do I fit this into a newer deck or a deck that's already established? Because I think that there is a ramp deck that wants Kiora because it obviously has a ramp effect built in, but I don't know how to build that, and there's no shell that's shown that's promising that would have that. So I think just as another Planeswalker in the blue-white deck is very, very good. I know Patrick Chapin wrote an article today, and he mentioned that having more 4-drops instead of early removal can be a problem, and I kind of got behind that a little bit more as I was playing the deck today against just random decks at my shop, because you would end up with these hands where you have Jace, Elsbeth, Kiora plus lands, and you really don't have anything until like a Supreme Verdict, which can be awkward.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but Kiora as a
card. Did you just talk yourself out of your own pick of the week?
No, not at all. Like, Kiora is way stronger than I thought it was. I thought it was garbage when I first seen it just because it starts at 2 loyalty. But since I played with it today, I think it's way more powerful than I gave it credit for. And I expect to see a lot more decks that try and use a Kiora or maybe even just build around Kiora going forward. And with that said, it's not uncommon for standard mythics to hit like 40 or 50, like how Rev was up to, I think, the highest I've ever seen it in standard was 35, and then Voice got up to 50, and so on. Granted, Kiora is not a 4 of, usually in the decks that she's in, but I think that it's a solid pick. Like, if you're going to ever play that card or even want to play that card, I think now's the time to get them, because I personally picked them up at 19 each, and I'm a player, so I feel like if I'm picking them up at 19, that it's going to be worth it. But then,
what about 25, which is what they are now?
25, I
that's
feel
just
like
about the ceiling for a Planeswalker most times.
I think so. Until it shows itself and proves that there is a ramp deck out there, because obviously ramp is what it's going to be used, I feel like that's probably true. But 25, if you can pick them up at 25 and trade, that's way better, I think. Because I paid 19 each in store credit, or I traded a dual land in the process of getting the other one. So I think that if you have 25, then I would trade for it, but only if you're going to use it. Don't trade for it if you're going to just like sit on it and try and trade it to someone else. But if you're a player and you're looking to ever use Kiora, I think it's still fine to pick it up at 25, but or outside of 25, I don't think so. I think I'd wait for it to prove itself first.
Okay, so I'm going to do a Corbin and throw in a second pick of the week with the Sylvian Caryd. Moto is 50 cents on paper, is $5. And I just think that discrepancy is pretty extreme. And I think, you know, eventually it might be like $1.50, $2 card on Moto. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad way to pick in on a long term. That card is pretty decent. And I think eventually you'll get a deck that will play, use it for the 3 colors. So it's a worthwhile card to look at. So Ryan, your turn. What's your pick?
So my pick of the week this week, it's already gone up a little bit. But, I mean, it's definitely dropped back down since it spiked originally. I think, Through the Breach is a fine pick. I think with, losing Stoneforge and stuff, you're more likely to see these kind of cheaty decks that are, you know, trying to work towards, flashing something into play or just trying to cheat Emrakul into play or something like that. And, like, the format's just, I think, gonna move a lot more towards aggro, and it's gonna let combo flourish a little more, as I think a lot of the controls are gonna kinda just fade away a bit. And anytime you have that happen, like any kind of combo deck or cheaty deck is usually going to have some sort of an advantage. And that's just one of those cards that people forget about until it sees play. And if it does see any Pro Tour play at all, it'll likely be, you know, spike up to 10 to 15 at least. And it's currently at like 6 to 8, I believe.
Are you talking on Moto?
No, in real life.
Paper, okay. I say the median price on TCG is right at 10 right now.
Okay. Well, I think it definitely has potential to go up from there either way. I think that those kind of decks are probably like the biggest splash kind of decks. Like, nobody's going to be surprised to see, you know, these like Bitter Blossom and stuff like that. Those cards aren't going to go up. There might be a couple of random cards to see like sideboard play that weren't thought of, but for the most part, that's been well picked over. And I think you have to look at what's the next evolution of that metagame. Like, where is it going to go from there now that these cards are unbanned? And I think that, you know, the pros that may be ahead of that are likely going to be on some sort of deck that can, you know, Through the Breach a creature or Corio's Vengeance a creature. I just don't know that Corio's Vengeance is necessarily, like, cheap enough to be able to get in on. I don't know if they've gone back down yet.
Well, speaking of, I've had a lot of fun in the last week. I've been playing this old, it was like an old extended deck that got better in Modern than nobody's, maybe the format's a little more open to it now. It's like the green-white trap deck where you play like Wimbrisk Heights and a bunch of ways to trigger it. You play Moss War Bridge, ways to trigger it. You play, just like Lotus Cobra, Knight of the Reliquary, Summoning Trap, Primeval Titans Emrakul's and Through the Breaches, and it's just like a million ways to cheat out Emrakul. That made very good use of Through the Breach, so like, I mean, the power of that card's not going anywhere. I would not be surprised in an open format for people to say, okay, what's the most powerful thing I can do? I can attack with an Emrakul. So I can see the potential there.
So Ray, it's time for Ray.
Yes.
Let's move out of this pick of the week and let's get into the meat of the podcast. Let's talk about your deck, the one that you're excited about. You're going to give away your secret tech. You don't give a fuck. Everyone can eat a dick, huh? So let people know. Break it down to it.
All right. So for the Pro Tour, what I'll be battling with, the Ray Future Pro Rookie of the Year race contended, will be Merfolk, Mono Blue, and Modern, a.k.a. Corbin's love child.
What? Corbin had sex with a deck and it was Merfolk? That's what love child is, right? Do you know what that means? You should stop saying that.
He had sex with
you should stop saying love child, Ray. That's what that means. Fair enough.
No, but I picked a Merfolk early on in the season when I was picking a deck for modern grinding on Moto. And I picked it at first just to see what it was about. It was pretty cheap to build at the time. Lord of Atlantis was like maybe 5 tickets. And it proved to be very good. And it's always been like basically my pet deck in modern. I've tried infinite decks, not really infinite, obviously, but like I've tried a vast amount of different decks, or mainly combo decks, because my strategy for the Pro Tour was if I was going to play one of the main decks like Jund or Pod or Twin, then Twin's a combo deck, but it's up top. Then I was going to try and play a fringe combo deck to try and catch everyone off guard, and all the fringe combo decks kind of just folded. So Fish was always the one that made me. I win all my money, all my dailies. I forwarded multiple dailies with it. I lost my winning in for a premier event 2 days ago with the deck. And it's just...
You're on my list too, huh?
Yes. It's a version of your deck. The main deck is yours. The sideboard has changed. We've kind of talked about sideboard going forward. Because we can't test new modern on Moto yet because the bannings haven't went in effect yet. But going forward, I know there's things that have to happen because of Zoo. Because Zoo is played on modern... on Moto, but not that often. And it doesn't have Wild Mikado, so.
Binder Mage.
Tidebinder Mage and Threads of Disloyalty.
Yep.
So, I will talk all day about my sideboard, because personally, I don't think John Finkel is going to listen to this podcast. And if he does, he doesn't know who I am. So, he sits down and sees Raymond Perez Jr. He's going to be like, don't know who this scrub is. Hopefully I kill him. And I'm like, sorry, John, I'm going to have to do the business to you.
All right, well then, Hellspice. That's
that sounds provocative.
Yeah, that sounds juicy.
What business exactly are you trying to do with Mr. Finkel?
Not hedge fund business, okay. Too much.
Ouch.
Tell us about your sideboard, because this is, like, Merfolk is an extremely adaptable deck. Maybe people don't realize you can actually jam a lot of cards into the sideboard to deal with the different matchups. So, I mean, what is your sideboard looking like heading into the Pro Tour?
Going into the Pro Tour, my strategy right now is because we have a house with me and 12 other people, or 11 other people, including myself. And basically, I know I'm going to play Fish regardless, so I'm just going to bring every card that I can think of that would want to be a sideboard slot. I don't have numbers hashed out yet, but I do know cards in particular like Graph Digger's Cage, Restoration Angel, that's totally different, Relic of Progenitus, Tormod's Crypt, Threads of Disloyalty, Spellskite, Hercule's Recall, Steel Sabotage. I'm just going to have a vast arsenal of sideboard cards that I'm going to bring with me. But the ones that are mainly focused are Cold Ice Elkie for the Mirror Match, which is straight up tech. So if you're playing Merfolk, I would highly suggest don't play Merfolk Assassin. Play Cold Ice Elkie because you're going to connect with it once. And once you connect with it, you're going to be so far ahead of your opponent. You're going to draw at least 2 to 3 cards. And if not more, and then those cards are going to override whatever your opponent does, which I found the hard way.
You think so? Like,
I throw you more cards than six.
I found that deck from losing to the mirror match on Moto.
In my experience, the mirror match is like pretty miserable, and nothing you do with 3 mana really affects it. Like, it's basically who draws Aether Vial, who draws more Master of Pearl Triumph instead of Lord of
Sure. Like, well, Master Wave isn't too vital, I don't think, in the mirror match, because basically, it comes down to is how much damage can you get in before your opponent?
Right.
Because I know I've lost games where I've been at 17 life, my opponent's been at 20 because he's been able to connect once with an Island Walker, and I can never catch that damage. Right. So I don't think Master Wave is overkill, but it's very good, but it's not like mirror match dependent. Where like Cold Ice Elkie,
No, the mirror match depends on, like, who draws Master of the Pearl Trident instead of Lord of Atlantis.
Very much so. I agree with that. Yeah.
So, like, that's why, like, I don't know if Cold Eye Selkie, it's, like, turn four. You swing with it, like, to get any advantage of it. Man, in my experience, the cards you draw on turn four don't matter that often. Like, that mirror match is usually decided by turn four. In my experience, like, you just want to draw Vapor Snappings.
Why don't you just play War Barge to give all your creatures Island Walk, man? That'd be awesome.
Well,
it's already a good combo with that Merfolk Assassin, so it's not dead in your other matchups.
I mean,
there you go. You can use that. That's all yours.
It's just a miserable mirror match, because, like, if you draw Lord of Atlantis and your opponent draws Master of the Pearl Trident, then you pump their Merfolk, and they don't pump yours, so you're behind, or, you know, they have Aether Vial and you don't, so you're dead. Like, there's very little interaction because of the Island Walking.
Yeah. And to be fair, I don't expect too much Merfolk mirror match at the Pro Tour. Like, if it's not Ralph Leve or Vincent Lamone, I don't expect to play against Merfolk opponent, which is good because for whatever reason, people still don't respect that deck. And that's the biggest advantage I have going forward, is that so many times I play against people on Moto and I end up crushing them with Merfolk just because I go, like, turn one, Curse Catcher or Vial or Vapor Snagger guy, and then turn two, Lord, turn three, Lord, turn four, Lord, Lord. And they're just like, why are you playing this garbage deck? And I'm like, I'm not playing a garbage deck. I'm with five fives. So I think the deck is way better than I ever gave it credit for. And I'm really glad that I ended up playing it once to figure out the strength of it. And I think that it has all the elements that I want going into a Pro Tour. I know going into the last Pro Tour, I know it was a wide open field, which I expect Modern to be now, because there's a lot more graveyard decks that might be viable due to the recent bannings and Jund falling off the map and Death Rite not being in so many main decks, where I just want a deck that plays blue because you have card draw and you have counter spells. The only disadvantage I found so far is when making my sideboard, I'm very restricted in what I can do because I don't have access to other colors. And so going to the house, I might test blue-white is the one that I've thought the most of.
Sig that way. Like, I don't know how relevant that is, and it's really mana-dependent, but, like, I always, when Merfolk is standard legal, at least, around Lorwyn block, that the Sig River guy was just a house.
Yeah, well, going, like, in Modern, the format's so fast that the protection is not really that relevant. Like, Kira, the Glass Spinner, she is way more vital to, like, the removal plan, because protection only protects you from removal, basically, because all you guys have Island Walker, it's super huge that you don't care if they block. If they do block, it's just the Abyss. Where Kira is in play, then it stops everything outside of Combust and Abrupt Decay. And obviously sweepers, because, you know, sweepers, sweepers. But that card in particular costs way too much mana. I've lost games where I can't, like, you'll keep hands where you'll have an island in a Mutavault, and then you can't ever, like, activate Sig. Granted, you'll have a different mana base, but still, the point is that, like, using mana is so efficient. Like, you win so many games because you're a tempo deck. You win games because you go turn one Vial, turn two Lord, turn three Lord Regery, or turn four, like, Regery into combo off where you play, like, three Lords in a turn type deal. Where spending two mana to protect your spells is not really where you want to be at. And that's ultimately where I saw Corbin didn't play Remand. And I agree 100% because Remand's only good if you have turn one Vial. You don't want to ever sit on your mana behind that, because all your spells basically cost two outside of a handful. And you don't have time to really sit back and be like, okay, I'm going to hold two mana and pray that they don't do anything. And if they do something, then I can Remand it or protect my spell. And Sig River Cutthroat is a beating. You draw so many cards off that guy, and people just don't see it coming usually.
Yeah, like, the strongest draw to going white would be against Stony Silence. Because Affinity is a pretty miserable matchup. It's winnable, but, like, it's not in your favor, certainly. Whereas, you know, if I'm splashing white, then I'm doing it because Stony Silence is saying.
Mute it. I'm drunk as hell. I'm just gonna ramble.
So, Ray, why don't you tell us, you know, obviously you're happy with Merfolk. What do you expect at the Pro Tour? You know, do you think everyone's just gonna be on Zoo? Do you think they're gonna be on, like, red, white, blue? What are you expecting?
Alright, going forward, what I'm testing for and what I hope is there. I haven't tested the Zoo matchup. I've talked to Zoo with you, so I'm not sure how good that is, from what you've told me, it's kinda rough. So I do expect a heavy influx in Zoo. Whether I'm not going to play against it or not, because what I found out last time going to the Pro Tour was red deck was one of the decks or to beat, and I only played against red deck once, and I played against all these like devotion decks and strategies that were unknown to the normal person going into the Pro Tour. So I'm kind of expecting something like that going forward into the Pro Tour. So I expect to play against Zoo. I just don't know how many times. I expect to play against a black-green Jund variant where they still have Liliana and Bob and Goyf and all the good Jund shell without Deathrite, because I do believe it's still there. It's just a turn slower, which is good because Liliana in 2 is very hard to fight for a lot of decks. And I also expect to play some type of graveyard deck. I know people are going to try that strategy. I think Dredgevine deck will have the potential to break out at the Pro Tour if it becomes that much of a threat, just because people aren't playing Deathrite's main deck, but people will have more dedicated sideboards. So being that this is my second Pro Tour, I'm not sure how much is actually going to be like dedicated to the sideboard. I don't know if people are going to like find out about these decks in testing and just have like rest in pieces or relics and whatever in their sideboard ready for the graveyard or not. But I basically plan to play against everything but combo decks. And Merfolk is pretty good against combo decks regardless, so I'm not too afraid of those decks going into it. So I just basically want to have bigger creatures than my opponent. And if I can fade a couple draw steps from Zoo to kill my lords, then I will have bigger creatures than they will have, hopefully. And if not, then I can have like Threads or even Spellskite to block or redirect damage or redirect the removal spell. Hopefully it's going to be good enough. So I expect Zoo, some type of Jund variant, whether it's green-black or Jund. And then Control, I don't know. I know Control has a lot of good cards going forward and good in the metagame. I just don't know how good Control is versus the rest of the field. I don't expect that many Bitter Blossom decks. I've tested against Fairies, and Fairies wasn't that good. And Black-White Tokens was very good, but I'm not sure how good it is versus other decks because I've only tested it on the Merfolk side. So I do think that Sam Black or someone is going to break like Blood Artist and Bitter Blossom, because that's just what they do, and they love those cards. Me, on the other hand, I'm not a deck builder, so I can't do that myself.
Sweet. So how excited are you that this is Modern, and what do you feel about that as far as being a Pro Tour that you're going to?
In the beginning, I didn't like it at all. I sat out a whole Modern season because I didn't like the format, and I was hoping it was going to change. But going forward, since I played Modern, it is very fun. I'm super excited knowing that it's a format where a lot of decks don't rotate, and even with the bannings, the decks won't change that much. They'll just have maybe like some fringe combo players or something like that that might not be possible because of Jund pop-up. So I'm excited to know that I feel really good about the constructed portion this time, where in Standard, I had a feeling that I missed something, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I kind of picked a control deck just to kind of hedge against that. So as long as I get my limited game going, I feel really good about the constructed portion and think that, you know, the fish are going to carry me home. I got some things, so I can disrupt their mana and counter their spells.
So Standard, we had this super series by Wizards. I actually don't know anything about it, but hopefully you guys could fill in the blanks. And then we also had SCG Nashville. So there's Born of the Gods cards there that was being played, but not so many. People were complaining about it because they didn't see great innovation at SCG. But it could be said that card availability wasn't there, and people didn't want to try to brew with a deck that was they didn't have time to test with. So there was some room for that, and I guess there was some super series during there that you saw a little bit more brewing going on there. So do you guys know what happened with the super series and what that whole deal is as a tournament?
All I know is that the viewers for that was maybe 1,000 that every time I watched it, and the viewers for Star City was 7. So I personally couldn't watch anything this weekend because my computer wasn't working on my internet access. But every time I tried looking at the numbers on my phone, it was not close. That people just weren't watching that.
So who was hosting that?
Star City was. It was the Super. They had the Super Sunday series where all the winners from all the day two of the Grand Prix went there, like Owen Turtenwald, Reed Duke, a handful of other guys, a Canadian guy. But like they had decks that were there, but also in the coverage, they didn't show the deck lists. So they're like mentioning on Twitter, like, oh man, this guy had a crazy deck. Feature in like Mahara. He had a crazy deck that supposedly was there. I never seen it. They didn't post a list. So I think that was poor coverage on their part. But at the same time, I don't know how many people cared about watching Modern Masters draft and like 4 rounds of Standard.
They posted some of the deck lists, actually.
Yeah, that was like the undefeated decks, though, from day one. Like, Owen Turtenwald's list wasn't there, I don't believe.
Yeah, that wasn't there.
And, like, I don't think Reduce was there. There was a guy who played a Junk, I think it was Junk, maybe it was Bant, that used Voice of Resurgence, and I think, I guess it was Bant because it played a Afara. But that deck, isn't that good. And I think a lot of people would have found out that had they playtested it, but I mean, obviously they probably didn't playtest it, but I think.
Well, that, like, they showed a bunch of decks on the mothership on coverage and they didn't say what their records were. So there was like that band deck, but like, I don't know how well it did, but it was using Archangel of Thune and Brimaz and Corsair Cruffix, which I thought was, you know, cute, but I don't know if it was cute or good because I don't know how it did. There was like a white-black mid-range deck, you know, that I thought was pretty good. Like, Bioblight is obviously everywhere, but again, like, I don't know if white-black mid-range with four Brimaz is better than the white-black mid-range decks we're seeing with zero Brimaz. So, like, the only thing I gathered was white-black aggro is not a thing anymore.
I think that people are just more scared of that because of, everyone playing, like, Drowning Sorrows and Bioblights that...
Yeah, like, you don't want to be playing, Zathard Necromancer. And if you have Zathard Necromancers, oh my god, fire sale them. Not only is Bioblight and Drowned Sour going to pull its pants down, but it's announced as a reprint in that event deck, so you do not want to be holding those right now.
Jeez, that's fair.
And I'm selling them now. Right on.
Yeah. I just want to see how good Mono Black really is. With two Mono Blue Devotion decks in the top 8 of the last SCG, that kind of raised flag signs to me, like maybe Mono Blue isn't as dead as I thought it was. Because going into this standard season, with Born of the Gods legal, I thought that Mono Blue was just gonna fall out of favor and it was gonna die because of how poor of a matchup it had against, the Blue White Saito deck that was everywhere that Alexander Hayne won with at the Grand Prix. And then Mono Black getting Bio Blight and Drowning Sorrow that kills all, basically almost everything in the deck outside of Frostburn Weird. So with two of them in the top 8, kinda made me reevaluate whether or not I wanna still press that deck or if that deck is just, are appearing just because of card availability.
Well, I think that's a lot of it in that first weekend. If I remember from seasons past, a lot of the decks, there's not a lot of change in that first weekend because, I mean, the cards are available on Friday. The tournament's on Saturday morning. If somebody doesn't want to buy them on site, they're going to have some trouble. I think next week is where we may see a little more, a little more innovation. Which,
but how much does that go towards? Because I know that if you're a serious Magic player and you're a grinder, You can have access to these cards. Like, if I wanted to go to our SCG Nashville, I could have playsets of Brimaz and Kiora and everything else if I really wanted to. So I just wondered how many players that are really doing these, like, results performance things, like BBD, for instance, or everyone else that doesn't have access to these cards, where is card availability really essential to what happened? Because if you're just a random FNM player, and you're just trying out, like, your homebrew, you're not really expecting to do well anyway. So if you don't have, like, the four Kiora for your Maze's End deck, like, were you really planning on playing or top-hating with the Maze's End deck? Or if you were, then what stops you from asking, like, your seven buddies or someone else at the event site if they have those?
Right. I mean, but, like, it's just maybe they don't. Like, maybe you get there on, like, your group of friends. You've pulled your cards from the one, like, after you drove down there on Friday. Maybe you guys bought a couple boxes. You get there on Saturday morning. You can't find one in the 30 minutes you have before the tournament starts. You don't want to pay Star City for it. I mean, you're just going to say, well, I guess I'm fine without it. Like, cause a lot of people go to this just for fun. And a lot of those people in a regular tournament, once it's more salvaged, do end up, you know, top 80 or doing well. I mean, yeah, like those people who are really well connected, it's no problem for them. And those people may look at everyone else and say, well, why can't you find someone who has it? But a lot of people show up to a Star City event with two of their buddies. And if they don't have it, they don't have it.
That's fair. I think being a grinder, I take that for granted for sure, because I have long passed the days of having to track down cards where if I need a card, I can go up to like 20 different people.
Right. So,
yeah, that's fair.
All right, guys, what else we got?
Things and stuff.
From the Vault Annihilation.
Oh, yeah. So somebody asked me about Judges Award. That's a pretty good hedge, I think.
Let's introduce it properly so we can cut out the dead space.
Let's introduce it by, I say, From the Vault's Annihilation.
No, you have to do it in like a Ruski voice. Very angry.
Ruski?
Yes.
What is this, 1983?
Yes.
This is all staying in. I'm not going to know this.
Good, you shouldn't, because like, we got to let everybody know that Ryan still says stuff like Ruski.
Anyways.
And we hope that Gorbachev tears down the wall, Ryan.
No, he's going to annihilate the wall.
I must break you.
Anyways, From the Vault's Annihilation, I guess I'm trying to, they basically just said, it's gonna be the most powerful spells in Magic or whatever. It's just gonna be like, kill spells, right? Like,
it's gonna be Ulamog's Crusher and Emrakul's Hatchling and a bunch of,
No, it'll be.
No, they all have Annihilator, guys. I bet it'll be Damnation and 9 shitty cards. That's
Cataclysm,
my prediction.
Damnation, Wrath of God.
Rout, Kirtar's Wrath, Winds of Wrath.
All is Dust is going to be there.
All is Dust would be actually a pretty good one.
It was just another UP but.
Easiest one, Kozilek. Only Eldrazi not to be reprinted. That's the one that's going to be in there.
I mean, that's probably.
Ulamog reprinted?
Huh? Yeah, Ulamog was a pre-release promo.
Oh, wow.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Emrakul was a
pre-release promo. Or not. I'm sorry.
Ulamog was in an FTV.
Yeah, Emrakul was already in an FTV. Other way around. Ulamog was in FTV. Emrakul was the promo. Whatever.
There you go. You got there.
Full every point being the point, Kozilek is not. It shuts your mouth.
You know what I think is one of the most annihilating spells in Legacy that could be in this deck that I would hope is in this deck?
Maelstrom Pulse.
No, Wasteland.
Ooh. I didn't think about that.
I mean, it really does annihilate your mana base.
It's not a spell. They did FTV lands and it says it's 15 spells, so I'm inclined to think there's not gonna be a land.
That's fair.
Have there been lands in any of the others that weren't lands or realms?
Yes, 20 has multiple lands in it.
Besides 20?
I mean, yeah.
I have to imagine there's at least one other, like, Exile? There's no lands in Exile?
No. Wait, right? Strip Mine? Question mark?
Strip Mine was in one of these products. Wasn't Strip Mine just in... Strip Mine was in Realms, I believe, right?
Yeah, there was Strip
Mine. We would only need to do the smallest amount of research, and we're just not willing.
No, there is Strip Mine.
Realms, it didn't have Strip Mine in it.
Okay.
And you have Kelsa's Wolf Run from...
Well, yeah, from the Vault when he had it. Strip Mine is from Exiled. Right?
I knew it! I'm so good at this.
It's from the Vault Exiled. So, yep, it could be a thing. There is precedent.
But it specifically said spells. Like, that... I'm not... No, it said cards. Did it say cards? If it didn't say spells, like... Huh.
Hold on, we got the internet. Why don't we just look this shit up?
No way! I would rather sound stupid.
Oh, you guys were just...
Okay, from the release from the Vault Exiled says Magic the Gathering card. It says, yes, it says cards, not spells. Alright, so let's see. Announcing from the Vault Annihilation. Let's see what it says.
Well, based off of this, there's gotta be some modern cards. This is the opportunity for them to reprint some modern cards that are gonna be needed in the format.
I bet it's Damnation.
I'm pretty sure Damnation, yeah. Damnation I think is probably number one, and all it does is probably close up there to number two. Just because those are two key cards that are played in modern.
You think there'd be Wrath of God?
No, there's no need for Wrath of God. There's enough copies.
How many Wrath times do they need to print Wrath of God?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a long time since they've printed it though, honestly. That they showed us is pretty cool.
But they don't have any Damnations out there really. So, Damnation is needed.
Corbin, it has been approximately like 3 months since they've reprinted it.
Reprinted Wrath?
Yeah, Commander.
Oh!
I believe you.
I didn't know that. Anyways, the From the Vault Annihilation does read cards, not spells.
Oh, okay. Wow.
That probably means nothing either way, but now we know.
Yeah, but we can't rule anything out based on that.
I really didn't know Wrath of God was on the Commander deck.
Because you don't pay attention to finance.
Yeah, that's
probably... It's not Merfolk, you don't give any shits.
That's probably it.
I think that's definitely should be on there. I mean, what better way to bring it back? So that might bring it back down to a reality price. So... Reality price and the price of reality. You want to talk about what happened? That was a horrible segue. I'm not going to even do that.
Are you even trying, Marcel?
I'm not even going to try.
Like someone was going, Marcel. Let's roll with that. Were you going to say, what's the reality of a $40 booth?
Yeah, what's the reality?
Booth is, it's not worth it. If something seems too cheap, it probably is. As a vendor perspective, I rolled in and like heard about this show. They were like, yeah, it's $20 for a table. And I was like, whoa, alright, well how long has this place been around? 19 years this convention's been going. I'm like, wow, this has gotta be good then, right? Like $20, how can you lose? So I was like, I'll take two. Take $40, you know, pay it up. Get there this weekend, and yeah, it was probably the worst show I've ever seen.
You know what would have taken 10 fucking seconds?
What?
Calling up your friend Jason who lives in Kalamazoo and saying, hey Jason, should I go to Marmalade Dog or would I be better off slamming my dick in a car door? And I would have said, well, Ryan, sit yourself down and let me tell you the story of Marmalade Dog.
No. Seriously, I called you the week before because I stayed with you.
Yeah, no, you said I paid money already and I'm committed to Marmalade Dog. Can I stay with you? That is what literally happened. I would have told you, no, you probably want to stay away from Marmalade Dog.
Oh man, if you'd have told me, then I'd have lost out on my $40 that I paid. Oh fuck, darn, I wouldn't have wasted the whole weekend.
Did you only lose $40? Is that what happened?
I would have only lost $40, but then I had to pay employees to go down there and work it.
What's you know story? What, I wanted you to come hang out, and it backfired because you left because the show was so bad.
No, we can't tell this. Wait, can we tell the ham sandwiches story?
Bring it out there, throw it. It's not after hours. This is the actual cast.
So Jason walks up to the booth, and I don't remember. Wes, was it you that came over and told me about it at first? Somebody was standing over there watching Jason play against this guy.
And he was so embarrassed.
Apparently, the dude was just. I mean,
he read the full text of every card he played out loud as he played it.
Oh.
So I mean, the guy just like he should have the drafting. He should.
It's
like
a 1/1 with that plus was 2+2 and like. Triple strike and vigilante.
But this guy, anyway, so this guy that Jason's playing, that's, you know, yada yada, Wes walks over and I'm like, how's that draft going? And I don't remember if it was him who said something about ham sandwiches.
It was Jason.
But anyway, Jason walks over at some point and is like, yeah, that's me and, you know, this one other guy and 6 ham sandwiches. And as he's saying it, the guy that he had just played was like standing at our booth and, definitely like overheard Jason. And like, I started going on and it was good. Like, I had not seen the guy at this point. And was saying something about ham sandwiches and really got to make a fool of myself as I, like, the guy kind of looked up at that moment. I got to recover, like, man, I love ham sandwiches. Yeah, it was bad.
Is don't be a dick.
best part of it was I saw the guy and, like, didn't care. Because I assumed he would think I was talking about somebody else.
Yeah, no, it was bad. But, I mean, no, like... there was another dealer right next to us, and we did more business with that dealer than we did with the public. That's how bad the show was. Yeah, I know, it was really, really bad. I mean,
really bad is that you managed to sell a Chromanticore for $4, and the guy right next to us had them priced at $250 in his case.
That's true. So I got to send Jason a text Friday, like the only sale we had on Friday. This guy walks up, and he's like, do you have Chromanticore? And he's like, looking at the card and read it.
He didn't ask, he's like, I think I should probably pick up this Chromanticore for my deck.
Oh, okay. Anyway, he came up, he was a pro, he knew what was going on. So he came up, wanted his Chromanticore, right? And like, looked into the case, and he's like, I gotta get that Astro Cornucopia too. And, it just really made me laugh, because those are the two cards that Jason, you know, got our listeners to turn off the podcast because of. And, I found that quite entertaining. So that was the people. These were the people, Jason, that you dislike.
No, this is the people that dislike me. I will buy this Cornucopia and this Chromanticore because Jason's not here, I don't care for him. You hurt my feelings.
That's probably not too far off. But yeah, no, he paid double on the Chromanticore. I didn't realize that, like, Carter was putting his card so cheap, but yeah, no, like,
yeah, you can thank me for that.
That's yeah, somebody's like, our casual cards like that, we kind of just put it, like, whatever prices. Yeah, like, those were the only things that sold.
I put cards and not even really like $2 that were bulk. Like, bulk rares, what is that? Eater
of the Dead?
I don't know. No.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, the demon that sacrifices dudes and shit. Yeah. A rare that's 49 cents.
Yeah.
Like, I sold two of those at $1. Like, in the showcase, they could have gotten them for, like, 2 for $1 out of the box we had sitting there, but
yeah.
Dudes just come up and was like, I want that one. How many do you have? Do you have 3 of them?
Yeah. Like, no, so, like, yeah, that was, we did sell a place at a Corsair Crucifix, so, I mean, that was, that was about it. That was the most competitive thing. No, we sold one Planeswalker, Kiora. And
ooh,
that was
Kiora!
That was it. Like, that was the most, like, most of our sales. We sold, I think, as much in lots as we did singles. And it was all less than, like, $100. Like, it just, I don't know. Apparently, college campuses, the people who were there don't have enough money to buy cards, and the cards they have aren't worth any money, so.
Yeah, it's not till they actually get out of college and get the jobs that they have disposable income enough to play Magic.
You that's just gotta true. Quit college like I did to become a Pro Tour player.
No, that's not true though, because like, I went to MSU, and there was plenty of people there who had like legitimate collections, and there's like a shop right on the north side of the town. And that shop is fine, I mean, they have real cards and stuff in there. And this was just, I don't know, this college town, apparently no one plays competitive Magic at all. I don't know where they were.
Well, the competitive players probably weren't at that event, right? They were probably...
No, they weren't. They were playing real Magic up in Grand Rapids and not dirtling around a college campus.
I mean, the dollar rare, whatever, my store where we sell all the, you know, bulk rares or rares that are technically 50 cents on the market, we just put them all in a box, call them a dollar. People love that thing. The casual players come in, they just like thumbing through it when it gets new stuff to find something for their decks, and nothing wrong with that. It's just a large demographic of who Magic sells to.
I would say, you know, Dirtles love to dig through boxes, but I love digging through those fucking boxes too, so it's not just Dirtles, like...
Yeah, for different reasons.
I will dig through a dollar box for like an hour, it's like, ah, those idiots, they had male Zarya in there at, three for a dollar, and I got three of them for a dollar. And like, I spent like an hour looking, and I just don't even care because I made $7 in that hour.
Oh man, opportunity cost. People don't realize that part of it.
No, I dug for $7 worth of cards at that show in an hour.
I grabbed Moto for 10 hours and made $2 an hour.
Yeah, I would have happily taken $7 an hour at that show.
Wow. Sounds exciting.
There you go. That's below minimum wage.
Yeah, I might have been able to make enough to cover my...
Whereas I just booster drafted all day and taught everybody in the room how to play Star Realms.
Yeah, Star Realms is pretty sweet.
You also cube drafted?
Yeah, you did cube
draft. Yeah, oh, that cube draft, that was a great experience. I crushed round one, and then we did an hour and a half for all the Dirtles to finish, and then round two, I was dead in 10 minutes to mana issues. Model 5. It was brutal.
He was playing red a lot.
Yeah, so I had to wait an hour and a half to get my pants pulled down.
Fireball.
So do you got something financially relevant that people could walk away from, a moral to this story that they can level up?
Yeah, find out from Jason. Or somebody who lives in that town, if that show's worth going to. And if the booth is $20, don't go. How can I lose $20? By going.
I don't think it's even that. I think there are some $20 booths out there that are fine. I think that all it is like, if you're just starting out and you're looking at these small-scale shows and stuff, you just have to very much pick and choose. I mean, especially if you don't have the money to recover from taking a loss on that kind of stuff, you have to be a little more careful about it. So, I mean, like, I guess that's the biggest thing you can take away from it is just, you know, if something seems too good, definitely do some research. Like Jason said, get a hold of somebody if you know. If you don't know anybody, go online and look at, you know, reviews or just see what you can find out about it.
If there aren't reviews, don't go.
Yeah, if there aren't reviews, don't go, I guess. There you go.
And so how about this? At what point should someone consider moving into the part of actually buying a table?
I think if you see something from the $200 to $400 range, that probably means that they're an established con enough to have, like... There's a point where, like, they know that having a booth at their spot is worth that much. So I think, like, that's usually where you want to be if you're looking for the cheaper booths. I mean, obviously, you're looking at GPs where you can be 5,000 plus at some points. And, like, that's unrealistic for most people. So, like, really, if you're looking for small cons, like, you got to be looking for this, like, the $400. I think that's probably your sweet spot.
I think Marcel's question is, if you're someone who, you know, buys and sells collections and has a lot of cards and goes through this stuff, how many cards do you need? Like, at what point do you look to say, hey, here's a PGQ with a $50 booth. Is this worth it for me?
If this is PTQ and $50, there's no question about it. If this is PTQ and under $200, there's probably no question about
Honestly,
it.
Honestly, you do $50 if it's a decent sized pre-release, probably.
Okay, so.
You're missing the point. The point is, what point does someone transition into wanting to get to the point with their renting booths?
This was a question we get asked a lot about, like, the setup Corbin and I have at, like, a store. How much? What?
You're the worst. You just hijacked the question completely.
Yeah, just get out of there, Jason. This is
somebody answer the question. I don't care who.
No, go ahead, Jason. I just, like...
No, it's fine. Go ahead. Say what I was going to say. Be as insightful as I was going to be. I fucking dare you.
Oh, no. Mine wasn't going to be insightful at all. I was going to say, when you stand in your house and you can't see anything that isn't magic cards, that's when you should start fighting.
Jason, please answer the question.
No, okay. So Corbin and I get asked this question all the time about, like, well... You guys have the, you know, the thing at the store.
We have the agreement with the store where we sell singles out of the...
We sell singles out of the case. At what point do you have enough?
Oh, my God. Would you please let him answer the question?
No, it's fine, because, like, this is no worse than every week when there's 100 people in Ryan's living room. They're all coughing.
Actually, that's just me.
So at what point do you want to have this agreement with the store where you're selling cards out of the case? And I think... Probably if you moved all that inventory from that case to a table for a weekend, the answer is probably the same. Probably about $1,000 worth of cards is my answer. You don't want to do it with less than that. You can definitely do it with more. But honestly, mostly the point of those shows is if I go and I sell $200 worth of cards but buy $1,000 worth, it was well worth it. So really you're mostly there to buy at those shows, but I would have about $1,000 worth of merchandise that I'm trying to sell.
I think that's good, and keep in mind, you know, when I started at the store, I filled up one small row on the case. You know, I did not have a lot in there. But you know what? It gave me a legitimate starting point, and it's grown since then to be, you know, somewhat lucrative and a lot more stock there at the store. So, you know, we've talked about this, touched on it before. you know, you always want to be careful with your LGS and, you know, understanding the owner's situation. If the owner sells singles, chances are he's not going to let you do that. But there are a lot of stores out there that maybe they run Magic, but they're a sports card store, so they don't really deal with it, or the owner just doesn't know about Magic. And if you think, you know, if you're a big trader and you're doing a lot of that, you know, maybe take the next step and talk to the owner if there's a financial situation that can benefit you both to kind of take that next step. And I think it's how you transition from being, a trader, the go-to trader in your LGS to being someone who can kind of get into dealing, and then the shows come along after that. And it's kind of that progression there. You don't just go straight from being nobody to spending, you know, buying a case of a set and showing up at a PTQ. You kind of got to build your way there.
Yeah, I think as far as the whole thing goes about how much you need to set up a booth, it really depends on what kind of your booth you're looking at too. Like I said, with this $40 booth fee, I mean, you could take $1,000 worth of cards, that would be fine. If you're going to go set up at a PTQ though, you have to expect that there's going to be at least a couple other vendors there. I think you want $5,000 plus an inventory for the most part. If you show up without that much, yes, people will come over and still theoretically sell you cards, but the more you have in your booth and the more legitimate you look as a store, the more likely people are going to believe that, you know, you're giving them these good prices and stuff like that. And I mean, it's not all about appearance. Obviously, like, if you're just paying better numbers, you're going to get the cards for the most part. But I mean, if you don't carry a name behind you that everybody knows, you really have to show that, you know, you have the stock, you have these cards, you have things people need. And sometimes it just matters about, you know, if you don't have all of the, you know, $20, $30, $40 mythics that you currently need, make sure you have all the commons on commons. Have a reason for people to come over to your booth. Like, that's the biggest part about it, more so than like a set dollar amount, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because that's like, I've kind of thought about the PTQ thing, and it's like, at this point, I don't really buy cases and new sets, so, you know, I don't have a play set of cures or something wants to buy them, but like you said, the commons and uncommons thing, that's a nice way to set yourself apart and, you know, give your would-be customers some value there.
Yeah, and you'd be amazed how many people come up, and you just charge $1 on commons and uncommons at a PTQ. It's not gouging. They came there without those cards. $1 is not that much money. And you'd be amazed how often you could sell cards that you couldn't, you know, you'd be bulking out otherwise just because somebody happens to need it for this weekend because it's a new card or something like that. And I mean, especially after a release like this, it's a huge deal. But, I mean, even in general, just have cards that people wouldn't necessarily expect. Anything that's fringe playable, take a playset with you. It doesn't hurt and have it in a box. It's, you know, having things set, sorted, and alphabetized like we've been getting to lately has really been helpful for that. I think that's a big step in, you know, if you're looking to make that next move too. You definitely have to make sure your stock is, you know, inventoried enough that it's not just about what you can put in your showcase, but it's about what you have behind your showcase as well.
There you go. You got those dreams, those champagne wishes with Frito-Lay budget, you know, you can make it happen. Get there one day.
You always know how to make it sound sexy.
I definitely don't think you can get there with just the commons and uncommons.
What's wrong with the Frito-Lay budget? I don't want to get sued by Frito-Lay because you have insist on making silly metaphors all the time.
Alright, you can eat your Buffalo Wild Wings and you can pay for it later, each and every time. This is brought to you by Pepto-Bismol.
And therefore, never Buffalo Wild Wings.
So, Ray, you got anything you want to shout out? Where people could reach you?
Yeah, you can hit me up on Moto at Ray Future Pro if you want to talk about stuff. People do that all the time. I'm on there usually a little bit later, so that's Michigan time too, so, you know, if you're on like California time, it's going to be kind of awkward. But also, Ray Future Pro on Twitter. Go ahead and watch me at the next next Pro Tour. That's going to be sweet. But basically, I just want to give a shout-out to all you guys for thanking me and welcoming me on your podcast once again. That was sweet.
What a kiss-ass. Are you kidding me right now?
No, man. I am sincere. I am. That was from the bottom of my heart.
I know.
You guys are homies. That's why I wear your shirt at our SCG Opens and PTQs and... Even though I'm supposed to be on Team MTG Madness for this next Pro Tour, I'm still going to have the Brainstorm short on because, you know, I think that it's more so about what I believe as a player versus dollar signs. So, yeah.
So tell people about that because I'm sure people are wondering if you want to clarify that.
There is a whole hidden element within the Pro Tour. But basically, once you get high enough status, a lot of teams have start seeking you out, asking if you want to be on their team. And the whole MTG Madness thing in me was I got linked up from mutual friends, and I met them at the Pro Tour. And then there was an opportunity for me to join the team where they would sponsor me for GPs and Pro Tours if I were to wear the shirt in feature matches, on-camera matches, whatever. But I don't think that as a player, with what I'm doing, if money was an option, I wouldn't be playing Magic. That's the issue. So I think that it's just more so what I need to do as a player and what I think is cool. And you guys are my homies, and I support everything that you guys do. So I have a token made after me. I have the shirt, so I'm going to rock the shirt, man. You guys are my boys, and yeah.
Right on. That's it. That's a family right there.
Yeah, that's family. You guys don't have to pay me anything. I was writing for free. I was repping the team for free. I talk about you guys. You know, I got to play, man. It's just more love than anything. It's more so that I feel honored to be on you guys' our podcast and just be associated with you. When people come up to me and be like, man, I heard Brainstorm Brewery. You're the Raymond Perez. I'm like, I feel that sweet. I'm like, yeah, man, that's me. They're like, oh, that's cool. Like, yeah, I've listened to a couple episodes. I love those guys. Or I played with, like, the Playmat, and they know the brand, and they don't know me. And I just think it's really cool that you guys got that going for you. So that's why anytime I have a chance, you know, I'm all about that.
Well, right on, because we're using you as much as you're using us.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? When I win the Pro Tour and I got the, you know, the trophy in my hand, I'm like, Dale, 3, Greystone Brewery, you know, that's for you guys.
That's when you get the keg and you pour it into there and they take a chug.
I'm gonna have to take that trophy and, put some vodka in it. Who knows?
Yeah, you get that $400 bottle.
Yeah, jeez. Okay. So side story real quick. I'm drinking vodka right now, but it's not the vodka I drank before. So I got my Pro Tour check, 2 weeks before New Year's happened. And so I had $5,000. I was just spending it ridiculously on basically whatever I wanted. And I go to a liquor store for New Year's. I'm going to go over to Ryan's house, for New Year's Eve and spend New Year's with him and everything. I walk into a liquor store that's, like it's called Big Ten in Lansing, or East Lansing rather, where they just have like absurd amounts of like microbreweries, all that good stuff, top shelf liquor, everything. And it's a little bit more up-priced. And I walked in, I was like, oh, what's your most expensive vodka? They showed me to a CLIX, which is Roman numerals for 159, I do believe. Maybe 129. 159, I do believe. But basically, it's this vodka from Kentucky where it's been distilled that many times over a 20-year period. And I was talking to her like, oh, that's cool, $400, whatever. And kept talking. And I was like, well, what's your second most expensive fifth? And she was like, oh, okay. Well, if you're in that budget, here's this fist. And it was like Stella Artois for $80. And I was like, oh, interesting. Well, then I'm going to buy them both. And she just kind of was taken back. And I was basically just buying it because she told me I couldn't buy it.
She did her job.
Yeah.
Basically, that's a sales technique, Ray.
It really is. But it got me, you know, I was like, oh, really? So I can't afford this? Well, guess what? I just got $5,000.
That's the pretty woman, like, you don't belong in this upscale boutique. Ah, I'm hooked with a credit card. Oh, you sure showed me when you spent 10 grand in my store. Sales technique. You totally fell for it because you're just an idiot with a $5,000 check.
Hold on. It gets better. So they don't know where I got this money from. They just see me as a snobby person, they told me. Which I wasn't snobby. I was just asking about prices. So after I buy this $400 or bottle of fifth and the extra fifth or whatever, I'm sitting here paying for it, and they're like, oh man, it has a wooden container, and they're like, oh, you can put your magic cards in there. And I was like, interesting story. Well, little did you know, you just sold alcohol to Ray Future Pro. And I was like, you can tell anyone that knows about magic about that. And I just walked out.
So in Ray's mind, he's a baller.
Yeah, I'm a baller.
In that lady's mind.
Yeah. 2 minutes later, I get in my car.
The actual story is, you can put your magic cards in here, nerd. And Ray's like, yeah, I will. And
yeah.
Did you know I own magic cards and I love them?
Well, actually, I plan to put my magical cards in here.
So how good? I mean, good lord, $500 worth of liquor.
It was crazy, like. Scotch or something that like ages in barrels is fine, but vodka. Distilling a vodka that many times,
yeah,
not going to benefit. Like, it's not going to taste better than 5 o'clock vodka that went through a
Britvic
twice.
Nope,
not true.
Have you had $400 vodka, Jason?
Exactly. Have you had CLIX? I didn't think so.
What did it taste like?
It tasted okay. For instance, I smelled it. And, or smells it. I'm not sure what the plural is. yeah, whatever the suffix is. That's the.
I had smelt. Therefore, I had dealt.
No, once I took a smell of the bottle, and that's better, it didn't smell like rubbing alcohol, which is a plus. And I tasted it, and it tasted enough where I needed to drink a beer as a chaser, so I don't drink stuff straight. But it was worth it in my mind. So, you know, I got a crystal pourer, I got a metal pourer, I got a nice wooden box, I got an insert that talks about the 20 years of history or whatever.
Did you put your cards in the box like you were supposed to?
I hope you did.
You better bring that to the Pro Tour and have that there.
That's going to be my deck box when I sit down. Oh, hi, John Finkel. What's this? No, it's not a fifth of that expensive vodka you drink every night. It's actually my deck.
And then Finkel will be like, yeah, I remember my first Pro Tour check back in 1995.
Yeah, they're going to be like, how much did you spend? Like, yeah, why?
Act like you've been there before, future pro.
This is what happens when you have the Brainstorm Brewery actually cash. So, Corbin, what'd you do with your $400 that you cashed in at GP Vegas?
I think I probably paid the water bill. Bill and the cable bill.
Yeah.
There you go. You got
paying the bills. Corbin's got the limited skills to pay the bills.
Hey, I bought a car.
No, I'm sorry. Corbin has limited skills.
And a computer. I did well with my $5,000. I got a car, a computer, and a $400 bottle, and some singles, and probably some bar money. But, you know, I did well with my money.
Right on.
And bought the crib some
more. Yeah, man. I'm going to have to earn another $10,000 because that's what you get minimum for top aiding a Pro Tour. That'd be the dream.
Yeah. Modern. You ready for that?
I'm ready for modern. I'm going to play some fish. I'm going to have to yell Corbin every time I play a master.
All you got to tell everybody is four merfolk.
Four merfolk. You know what? Tidebinder is a card that kind of got forgotten about, and it just may make the difference in making Zoo a winnable matchup where it used to be unwinnable.
For sure. I totally agree with that, just because if you violent Tidebinder, if you just hardcast Tidebinder and lock down a Wild Nacatl or a Termagoyf or anything that's green and just can like either trade with something, or just have more devotion, because Thassa is, I think, really big in that matchup. Or just, like, in theorizing. I haven't played it too many times, but, like, having a 5-5 indestructible I can just chump block for days seems pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to be able to keep your devotion, so it helps with that. I mean, the thing is, like, curse catchers are kind of embarrassingly bad in the matchup. They kill a lot of what you do, but it's the kind of thing where if you're alive long enough to kind of outpace some of their removal, then like you'll win because your guys will get bigger if you can make the game go long enough. And Master of Waves is a pretty big beating as well because their only out to it is like path. So like Tidebinder just kind of buys you some time. It can lock down a lot of their deck. You know, if they're using removal on it, they're not using removal on your lords. So, you know, it does a lot that you need in that matchup.
Writing Seas can also be an issue.
Yeah, yeah. I showed Ryan. He showed me that firsthand when I played against Ryan and on Moto. I Spreading Seas, like, one of his lands, and he was locked out of the game for the majority of it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. Like, you have to have, especially, like, I was working on the domain, rather than, like, the three color. I think I'm gonna switch over to three color, because I think it's a little more resilient to that. But the domain zoo, like, it's just so hard to set up if you're playing against Spreading Seas. Like,
yeah.
You end up getting shut, like, you can shut off your Loam Lions, your Curd Apes, like, you hurt Nacatl, like, it's just really bad. it was not fun, and, I mean, Zoo already doesn't run a ton of lands to begin with, and
if I could survive to cast Master of Waves for like more than one token, like two tokens is good, three tokens, like you're probably gonna win the game against Zoo. It's basically how it came down. If I could make it to that turn, whether it be turn four or five or whatever, without being at three life, then you were good to go. So.
Hey guys, can we do pick of the week again? Since we're talking about the Merfolk deck again.
Yeah, let's go in circles. Let's do it all over.
It's time for the pick of the week.
So hold up, my pick of the week is going to be Storm Breath Dragon, and this is by Brandon Long. I think this is one of the best alters I've seen in a while, so you got to check that out. You can find him on Twitter. He is I Am Narv.
Did he paint it or did
check
he like use the computer and do that?
Oh, he definitely used the computer on this, but that is Photoshop being used to his full potential.
Am I the only one that doesn't like those?
Really?
He's got the new
marking.
The new marking and everything on it too. That's kind of cool.
That's sweet.
I mean, this one does look kind of cool. Like, I don't most of these. This one's pretty sweet.
Is this the Brandon Long that won the PTQ?
I don't know, actually. He works for the factory. He's a judge over there at the factory. Shout out to the proxy guy Z. He's got a website there where he has a bunch of people doing alters and they have competitions. And Brandon Long was so good they made him a judge. He has some pretty insane stuff if you look back at some of the other things that was going on.
Also mistaken, it was Brandon Large, not Brandon Long.
Oh well.
No. Brandon Long is the guy that was in the movie Galaxy Quest and that's Justin Long. Shit, never mind. I don't know.
Something anyway, long.
My pick of the week is the Seder token that Brian Clymer did for us, because I finally got mine in last week. They looked incredible and people really liked them. So good job, Jason, finally sending them to me. And nice job on that artwork, Brian.
Well, my pick of the week is Ray Perez, because he came on our podcast. And he's always super cool to us. And he wrote for free, and that's pretty funny.
Yo, that man, was, I don't even deserve that. That was
Brandon's impression right there, Jason. That's what you sounded like.
See, so I wonder what happened, because we paid Ryan for those articles.
What articles? Wait, what? No, you didn't.
How many Z's in embezzlement?
Oh, man. We just started the thread. We pulled the thread. What's going to really happen?
Ryan just embezzled money from himself. That doesn't even make sense.
To be fair, Ryan has paid for some events for me. So, you know.
Some of them went better than others.
Oh, hold on. We don't need to get in there. We was just joking.
Just say, I don't.
Love how defensive Ryan got.
How much should I smoke? I don't need any amount of money.
Embezzlement. He was like, yeah, I may have embezzled, but I paid for some events.
No, but to be fair, I've had websites offer me like, hey, if you want to write for us, we'll give you money. And I'm like, LOL, look at you. I don't want you.
Yeah. So.
I mean, honestly, the longer you wait, the better the deal gets.
I mean, so. It's not even about that. It's just more so, like, if I'm going to write, I want them to read it. And if I don't want to be on their website, I'm not going to be on the website. I'm more so...
I hear SCG's looking for people.
Yeah, I don't care about SCG. I mean, like, if I
Ray,
cared
about... future former writer for SCG.
Yeah. No, the basic thing is that if I cared about the publicity, then, you know, I would be out there, like, moving from Michigan. If that's really what I wanted to do. But, you know, I enjoy magic and I'm glad I'm good at it and I'm glad that I can do stuff in it. But, like, I enjoy being known in my own, like, Midwest, but I don't care if I'm known in California. It'd be cool. Don't get me wrong. Like, it was really sweet at the Pro Tour when they're like, hey, you're the future pro. And I'm like, yeah, that's sweet. But at the same time, if I wanted to be known, I'd be, like, actively writing articles and sending them into Cedric or, you know, Owen or LSV or whoever does General Fireball. But, you know, I'll just do what I want. I'm a rogue guy.
Free spirit.
I like it. I wish there was more people out there who like did that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Plus it only like, you don't really help the big teams like putting on a shirt for them. Like people already know that CFB and Channel Fireball and like most of these guys exist.
Yeah. You also gotta understand too that like a lot of those top teams don't go out scouting for new players. Like they get ins from other people. They don't, like they're not gonna look at me and be like, oh this guy's in the rookie race. Oh this guy's not known. We're gonna help him out. No, I'd have to actively seek them out. And while that's cool and all, but like my best friends in the pro community have been because they've talked to me as a normal person and they haven't sought me out like Lucas Tayoc or Thomas Holsinger or, you know, even Jacob Van Luden or any of those guys, you know, they didn't look at me and be like, oh, we can expose him or we can like, you know, not expose. That's not the word I was looking for. We can,
Or is it?
No. Yeah. No. What's the use of, excessively use someone. I can't think of the word right now. It's
exploit,
Ray.
Exploit! That's the word. We can't exploit him. You know, like, they're not looking for that. So, to be fair, if I go up to, like, Kai or someone like that, and I'm like, hey, I'm qualified for my second pro tour. Can you let me on your team? And they're going to be like, no. We're good. I'm like, that's cool. You're a Hall of Famer. Next time. So, you know, like, I expect, like, if I want to be on those teams, it's going to take me top 16ing or top 8ing X amount of pro tours or showing that like, you know, I'm a guy.
I feel if you top 16 this one, you've probably,
I don't know. There's people, I don't want to bring up their name because I don't know if they want to publicly name, but there's people that are like gold level pros that I talk to that are still not on legit teams because for whatever reason, like they don't like each other or they're just not offered or whatever. And I think that's kind of weird. Like if you're a gold level pro for more than a year, like I'm a gold level pro for this year. I'm a gold level pro for next year. Like, you've proven yourself. Why are you not on a professional team? Like, why would they not actively want, like, you on their team or, like, be okay with you being accepted on the team? It's just weird. Like,
if you got like, bad breath.
I mean, that's a possibility. I personally wear Prada cologne and brush my teeth 3 times a day, so, you know, that's never going to be an issue for me.
Do you wear deodorant, though?
I do wear deodorant. I Old Spice Swagger, so, you know, that's what we do. That's one of my biggest pet peeves is smelling bad. I hate that. I've hated that since I was like 7. So I will never be that guy at the tournament who smells horrible. I might smell like smoke since I smoke cigarettes, but I will not smell like
$400 vodka.
Or $400 vodka. Jeez, that's good stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think there's a whole demographic to publicizing yourself in the pro magic community. And there's not a lot of people who actually take the time to figure out what needs to be done. Or there's a lot of people who just don't care. Like, there's players out there that would just be scouted. Like, for instance, I don't know what it took from Owen to be a random Wisconsin guy to be an on-channel fireball. I don't know if they approached him or if he approached them or what happened there. Like, there's, like, a lot of mystery to me personally, like, from how to, like, get from A to B on that. But then you got, like, a lot of these smaller teams like Hot Sauce and Brainstorm Brewery and, like, MTG Card House and so on and so forth that, like, will actively seek out players that do well in, like, Open Circuit or win a PTQ or something like that that will, you know, perform, but they catch them at an early time. I don't know, like, if you're just a random person, how you get from point A to Star City. I don't know how that happened. And if it did happen, I don't know. Maybe it's a Magic Illuminati. Who knows?
All these conspiracies.
Yeah. Someone asked me the other day if I was in the Magic Illuminati because I went from being zero to hero and like the Pro Tour circuit and like PTQ circuit. And I was like, I don't know, man. I just play a lot of Magic.
There is definitely, like, as much as we joke about it, there's definitely a level of, like, when you get to a certain level pro, part of the reason you get to stay there is because, you know, you have this group of friends. And, I mean, there's the ability to have people you can split with or even just, you know, people dropping to you because they know that, like, you need the top eight to stay at this level pro or whatever.
Sure.
Like, I mean, that's definitely a thing. I don't necessarily think that's what it's all about. Obviously, like, those people wouldn't have been there in the first place if they weren't good for the most part.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some times, I think, when a team will help, you know, kind of carry someone through a rough season.
Well, like, I was telling someone else was at the last Pro Tour, I realized how many pros actually had sideboard guys that don't know what they're doing going into the match. So they just have this deck, and they're handed it to them. And they're like, here's this deck, here's how you sideboard. GL. Like, use your technical skill to win. I didn't realize that was a thing. I was at the Pro Tour, like, shuffling in 15 cards, taking out 15 cards, like, randomly guessing sometimes, like, when I played against a Votion deck or something like that, just taking principles that I knew about. But there's legitimately people out there, lots of them, at the Pro Tour who just have notes and don't know what they're doing. They just have good skill, and they're just in there like, okay, I have this deck that my team gave me. I'm going to run with it, and here's the notes that they gave me. So I know that says a lot about pro players, too, is that that's why I've personally taken upon myself to tighten up my technical skill, because that's basically what it comes down to. When you're faced with a new opposition, you have to know what you're doing with your own cards before you know how to, like, do anything else. I don't know. Technical play is so important.
Man, this is a good podcast. Podcast that never ends, but man, it's all filled with content.
I'm gonna say, do we want to wrap it up?
Well, why do that? Like, you know, shout outs to Heavy Meta. This is Heavy Meta going on right now. We're gonna go to 2 hours. Yeah, all right. No, we're not. We're out.
No, we're just gonna end it abruptly. This could go forever. That's well, how we do see it. Ya.
I mean, we already did our shout outs a while ago, and then we got into a story, and then now we're at the end.
Yes, I know the novelty has ran out. Well, thank you for joining us for the podcast that never ends, the story that never ends. Brainstorm Brewery, shout out to Ray.
Thank you.
Root for him at the Pro Tour. Give him some love.
Yes.
On Twitter. Make sure you let him know that you know you got him. Give him the support. You know, he's going to be out there, and he's gonna feel the love that you guys give him. You know, all the positive wishes.
Request those feature matches.
Yeah, request my feature match.
That was one thing I was really disappointed about last time. Is like, Ray was doing really well, and they just never feature matched him. Like, he was never even, you didn't even get to go up on the feature match stage.
I went to the feature match round 13.
Yeah,
but that was against Germany's army. They didn't cover me. I was just in the background. But to be fair, I'm also competing feature matches with Hall of Famers. And I don't take offense to not having a feature match. Now, let me win a Pro Tour. The next Pro Tour, I better get some. But before that, I don't take offense at all. Like, I'm just an up and coming.
It was just really odd because right from the beginning, they had you up on that board as, like, someone to watch. Like, that was out of nowhere. I don't know why they, like, chose you of all people. But, like, right from the beginning, it seemed like they were keeping an eye on you. And then they kept talking about it and kept talking about how you were doing, but they never showed how you were doing.
Illuminati.
Like, yeah, I don't know. Like,
it's true, though, because you're on that high level of coverage. Like, honestly, the main draws when you're on that high level, that many viewers and your high profile is your big top name.
Oh, no, I definitely.
And you want to showcase them. So, I mean, I could understand because anybody else besides, you know, the Brainstorm family, you know, like, they're going to be like, Ray Future, who? You know? I mean, no offense, but, like, you know, you're not, like, trying to establish
a name. Maybe that was before that Pro Tour when we finished 11th and got featured on the mothership and all that kind of stuff. But now, like, it's...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This time, I see Ray getting a featured match. If people get out there and hit him up and let him know, you want to see more Ray. So, you know, let him know. He's already made it before. He's coming back again. He's ready to rock the world.
Yes, sir.
So watch out for him. This is Ray Future motherfucking Pro Perez.
Ray motherfucking Future Pro. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, Ray Future Pro for the the, you know, family podcast.
Yeah. I'm sorry I said motherfucking. Can you take out the part where I said motherfucking? I'm sorry. Oh, fuck, I just said motherfucking again.
Alright, wow, I think we're over our limit right there. Yep. Well, I suppose we're out.
Alright, peace.
Motherfucker!
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.